when you're not supposed to touch the face, but you touch the face anyway. It's That's So MLS with myself, Nick Thornton, and with me as always is Andrew Bates.
Hello.
This is a North American soccer podcast where we go through MLS and talk about Canadian teams, North American teams in general. How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing great. I was just in Toronto. Toronto were out there having a real awful day elsewhere. So I guess I didn't get to see them, but probably for the better. Maybe for the good for me. Maybe it would have been entertaining if that game would have taken place in Toronto. Who can say?
Who can say?
That 3-1 loss.
Well, and we're about to trade places because I'm headed out there this week for a couple of weeks. And I am going to still try to get myself to the Dallas game and see what BMO Field is all about. I'm excited. I've never been to another MLS stadium, so.
Yeah, that's great.
Cool. So we're going to do something a little bit different this week because there's just so many games, and rather than spend 3 hours going through every single one, we are somewhat begrudgingly going to be looking at MLSsoccer.com's power rankings.
Now, part of the reason, as you were saying, there's a lot of games. I think we've, now that the CONCACAF Champions League is over, we've moved past. Now that there's no midweek games for a minute, MLS is just jamming in as many games as possible into the schedule ahead of the World Cup break.
Mm-hmm. A World Cup break that it turns out maybe not be that necessary or impactful to MLS. But nice to have anyway. So
everybody would have planned it differently, I think. But that's the way it is.
Indeed. I think one of the teams that has the most MLSers is actually Costa Rica. I think I saw at least four or five players on their team that are from MLS.
My understanding is that's Panama, who's got 7.
Okay. Fair
enough. Costa Rica has 6.
6, right, okay. Because I know there's Waston, Aruti, and then a bunch of others.
6 if you count Johan Venegas, who's been loaned to Saprissa, which doesn't count.
That does not count. So in looking at the power rankings, this is not a great tool. I don't know how much this is worth, which is partly why I wanted to use it as a vehicle today, because essentially I guess the point is that it's looking at teams' form and sort of ranking them in the league based on their form, other key business indicators. I'm not really sure. What's your overall sense of the power rankings?
Well, I see that number one on the list is Atlanta, which makes me think of a parody article posted to the actual San Jose Earthquake site this week that says, surprisingly, player of the week named awarded to a player not on the Atlanta United roster.
Yes.
Which to me was wild that was on an official MLS website. But yes, everybody's still talking about Atlanta quite a bit.
They are indeed.
After a week where they split.
Yeah, Atlanta's been at the top of the power rankings for a while in the number one spot. And so for Atlanta's week, you know, they lost 2-0 against Sporting Kansas City, which I thought was a fantastic performance from Sporting KC, and we'll get to them in the power rankings. But the thing that I got out of that game was that it looked like Atlanta started off doing their usual thing and then had their goal called back, which I really couldn't figure out what it was called back for. I think it took a deflection, and then somehow they decided because it was deflected that the player ended up at was offside. But I honestly didn't really understand what the call was. But then it all goes south because Guzan just comes flying out of the box, takes out a striker's feet and gets sent off, and then basically it's up to Sporting KC to tuck away the goals. But Tim Melia made a really strong argument for being goalkeeper of the year again in this game. He somehow seems to always be in the right place, and if he's not, he will get there.
Yeah, and you always have to rate everything on a curve in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, too. Like, a really good performance is a great performance there. Because of the pressure of the fans and the way everything is put together.
Absolutely. And then Atlanta was able to overcome Orlando City, but the, you know, that game looked a little bit dicey at points, and I don't think it's a particularly surprising result given the talent that Atlanta has, but I don't know. I mean, I don't really want to succumb to the power rankings system here, but Atlanta at number one, I feel like is a little bit lofty, and MLS fans and MLSsoccer.com in general just seems to have a little bit of a hard-on for Atlanta that doesn't always seem to quite equate to reality. Not to say they're not good, but do you agree that they're number one in the league right now?
Well, I'm also one thing I went to go look at to try and compare to this is the standings. I think that like the actual standings, which are perhaps the best power ranking that you can come up with, and they aren't like being number one in points. It's important. Mm-hmm. I think that they, the other teams that I would call, they're definitely in the mix because the other teams that I would call contenders still haven't necessarily put it all together or matched their promise with with performances and points on the board. So I'm actually not strictly speaking against it. MLS, you know, MLS loves its front running teams, but they're as good as any. And if you look at teams, you know, operating as a consistent system that are threatening on attack and exciting to watch, as much as, you know, we make a little fun of it, I think Atlanta is up there. Columbus is second in the East, and I still think is spotty week to week.
Mm-hmm.
There are games, and their big win that they had this week was a great result for them, but I would definitely look at them as up there at the top, Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm not saying they shouldn't be near the top. I'm sort of, I guess my thing is that considering Sporting KC's form, to me the power rankings are a little bit more about form recently as opposed to necessarily through the whole season. Although I think I'm not sure what logistics they're using or stats that go into making this up. I would say, though, if Atlanta's going to be first, SKC needs to be second, except they're not. It goes to New York Red Bulls, who had that massive win against New York City and have really, really shown that they've put together a very strong side. But they've also been kind of shaky this year.
I am going to counter you on this. In my views, if the whole point of having a power ranking system is to, and I know I was just talking about the standings before, is that I'm the guy that has been saying that the New York Red Bulls are undervalued relative to their standings position.
True.
I think that they are there. I almost think that their key skill is a little bit more attacking based than defense, which is what Sporting Kansas City is known for. But I'd say they are kind of similar teams in their conference in that, like, they are scoring by committee. They are kind of having to scrap together wins, and they're pulling together big results against against the star-struck teams from against star-laden teams.
Yep.
From each conference.
No, it is a good point that, you know, they have been very, very good. But again, you look at the table and they're actually sitting fifth in the Eastern Conference. I agree. I think they're undervalued. And I think as they're a couple of games behind most of the teams that they're behind, they could make up 6 points and leapfrog into second or third quite easily. In terms of form, I still think SKC has been a little bit better than New York Red Bulls recently. But potato, potato.
The example in terms of the teams that were in the CONCACAF Champions League and went deep with it, they've played as many games as Toronto, and they have 11 more points.
Yes.
So.
Oh, we'll get to Toronto, don't you worry. LAFC coming in at number four. I actually feel like this is a pretty fair assessment. They've definitely been the early darlings of MLS, and people saying, they are coming up on having a record-shattering best MLS expansion franchise start ever. Mm-hmm. And of course, as we've talked about lots previously, they can definitely give up goals, but they just keep knocking in so many, it makes it very difficult to score against them. They had a pretty tidy win against Minnesota, and then drew 2-2 to New York City. I thought that game was actually a big test for both teams, and not a shocking result. Probably fair that they split results. But yeah, I feel like fourth is probably a fair assessment of where LAFC sits right now, league-wide.
One thing I never realized is Tyler Miller is the LA goalkeeper now, or was he the backup? Because he was.
No, he's their goalkeeper.
Oh yeah, that was the expansion draft. I guess it just escaped my mind. But he was the one that I was thinking of because I'm confusing him with Tyler Derrick. Never mind. That would have been different. When you see teams, what I would say, the New York and Kansas City are similar teams. I would say that these two teams, New York City and LAFC, are also very similar in that they're based on attacking rhythm. They're used to blowing out opponents, and therefore have kind of canceled each other out when the two teams actually met.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And New York City FC, yeah, I agree. They are very similar teams. They've had a great start to the season. Some part of me just feels like it's not going to stay there forever. I think they still, obviously so much runs through David Villa that as games get congested, seeing how his fitness holds up and how much games he'll be able to play, I'm not sure that they'll still continue to have the same blazing thing, but considering their next opponent is Colorado, you have to think that's an easily winnable game for them.
Well, teams have been proven wrong. Teams have been shocked. Not Red Bulls, but some teams.
It's true. It's true. And we have seen Colorado has shown ability to score goals and win games this season. Not many, but some. Mm. A team that I feel like is unfairly... Now we're kind of into the round of teams that I think maybe should have ranked a little higher, although I guess that it changes around everything. But Dallas at sixth. Dallas has had an exceptional season. Great team chemistry, doing everything right. They've only lost one game. Defensively, they've been as tight as we've seen them in the past. They've given up the fewest goals in MLS. I'm surprised to see them ranked so lowly. But if we forget the rankings for a second, I definitely think Dallas is a team that over the coming weeks is going to climb up the table considerably. Their next game is against Vancouver on Friday. Vancouver, of course, has a game tonight on Wednesday. I think that for Dallas, especially an away game or a home game for them, I feel like is a strong possibility of picking up another 3 points against a beleaguered and tired Whitecaps.
Well, here's the question: as you consider what a ranking of what the top teams are every week, when we talk about our team of the week each week,
yeah,
I feel like the top 10 in MLS are not that far apart from each other, and you could easily sort of just shake it up and have it be something different each time, right?
Like true, yeah.
And Dallas are, and this is my point about when we talk about Columbus, they can sometimes look like the best team and then sometimes look like nothing the next week. But Dallas has been great. I continue to really enjoy Maxi Arruti, who I think that, like, you know, when you, I was thinking it when I saw his amazing first goal,
Mm-hmm.
But in the moment I thought it, the announcer said, what? Do that, Zlatan? It's like this goes to my point, I think, of talking about him as is sort of the league superstar that we don't think of as a league superstar.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think we talked last season about, too, Max Rudy as being somehow just not on anybody's radar and supremely undervalued for his talent.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the few consistent players last year, I thought, for Dallas.
That was a good game. That was a rollicking game, too. The Dallas 3, LA Galaxy 2. Ola Kamara mm-hmm. had a great header. That one was a really interesting one.
Yeah, and I also thought, like, a big win. I know LA has struggled, but they've been better recently, and I thought this was a good sign from Dallas that they're ready to go toe-to-toe with big clubs, regardless of if it's just because of star power or not. Dallas has been a very consistent team this season.
How are we feeling about Ibrahimovic? He almost scored in the final minutes with a big old free kick that hit the post.
Hit the post and then came back out as fast as it went in and sprayed out like 40 yards off the post.
It would have been pretty if it would have went in, but I guess that's kind of the same as saying it would have been good if it was good.
Yeah, we've talked about it before. Like, Ibrahimovic's talent is unparalleled, but the reality is even he misses shots. And here in North America, we're used to seeing European highlights, but not necessarily European lowlights of the superstars. And Ibrahimovic is going to have his days, and he's going to have other days. And we talked about how it would be an adjustment for him in MLS, and maybe people were underrating that. And we've seen LA has continued to struggle, even with one of the best players in the world as their striker. So Ibrahimovic will continue to be great, but I think if people are expecting him to have a 20-goal season, I think they might be in for a bit of a surprise. However, 4 months from now, I might be eating my words.
Of course. Now, we talked about, you know... I was saying that Columbus could be streaky from week to week, but they had a very good week this week.
They had a hell of a week. Now, Philadelphia has shown glimmers, and they're going to be a team I watch a little bit more closely because I feel like everyone's just kind of written them off, and I think they do have some good components in their team. However, it was nice for Columbus to just go in and get the tidy win against a team like Philadelphia. They didn't need to throw everything at them. I actually kind of liked that Columbus just sort of held back a little bit and just got a comfortable 1-0 win. The game for me that was perhaps one of the games of the week was the fact that they came in and just rolled over Chicago and beat them 3-0, which is certainly not a result I think anybody would have expected last year. So Columbus is quietly putting together a very, very strong season. And, of course, it just continues to be interesting that this is a team that, you know, this time next year could be in San Antonio or elsewhere, yet is sitting second in the East, has conceded the second fewest goals in MLS, and, again, is just kind of quietly putting the work in and climbing up the table.
Well, again, they have it there. Why not us? Why not now?
Yeah, absolutely. And that philosophy seems to be serving them very well.
That Chicago game was quite interesting. Let me look at that there. I'm trying to remember the circumstances of the free kick. I think this is one of a few. We saw a couple, or the penalty kick that opened the scoring. We saw a few penalty kicks this week that were like sort of no fault, but definitely foul.
Yeah.
Foul kicks where it's like you look at it, and some people might say, well, I'm not sure, but it's like the foul was definitely there. It's just that there's, you know, you you may not have attempted to. You may have fell into the player as they were trying to catch them. This is maybe an issue with MLS teams defending on the break. The problem with MLS defenses of having too many breaks and having defenders trying to break their legs on the break, then accidentally fouling people or having to foul people or what.
Yeah, I agree. There's definitely a number this week that were kind of like little tugs on the shoulder or players coming from behind and running into a defender and basically hip-checking themselves and getting a penalty shout. So it's always hard, but you know, I know around the world in different leagues it's not necessarily more consistent about what a penalty is and what a penalty isn't, and a lot of it matters on, you know, the game in particular.
Yeah, also a great week for Gazi Zardes.
Yeah. Great week for him.
And if you think with the two goals, and if you think that he, because he scored the other one too, and he caused the penalty.
Yeah, and again, another player that just, you know, greener pastures, a change of scenery for him seems to have done wonders, and is playing some of the best soccer of his career here. So it's a pretty exciting prospect for Columbus right now that their big signing is living up to the hype, and they really, they've only seemed to have, like, succeeded even after the loss of a key player like Justin Merrim. Columbus still is finding ways to make it happen for them.
Absolutely. Next on the power ranking list, Orlando had a rough time with Atlanta, falling to the Atlanta Buzzsaw, says the power rankings. But I honestly didn't think that the two teams were that far apart.
I didn't think so either. This is one of the games that I was able to see more of, and I thought it was a good match. And Orlando took a lot of pressure on, but also had their chances. And it was great to see Justin Merrim, aforementioned previously from Columbus, get his first goal with Orlando.
Yeah, that's true. That's a player that maybe has not had the best surroundings changing experience.
Not so far, but you know, you imagine, you know, it took Kleschen a while to, and Dwyer a little while to connect and get into form, and I think this is another case of it. And this is another one where I feel like, considering Orlando had a 6-game unbeaten streak, which is very unlike Orlando, I'm kind of surprised they're sitting down at 8th. It's also funny because MLSsoccer.com, it's just an amalgamation of voices, but last week it was, is Orlando the team to beat this year? Are they going to be MLS champions? And then they lose the next game, so, and are ranked 8th. Don't know how it all works out, but yeah, if Orlando can keep fit and get Merrim kind of more into form, get Dwyer a little bit more consistent, I think we're going to see them continue to climb up the actual standings.
They would be 7th on a combined table. Yeah, if you look at that first penalty kick is really something, huh?
Yeah, it's a little dicey.
The arm is definitely the, it's definitely that the hand is on the arm, but I don't know that it's any more forceful than the hand that you might put on the arm of somebody that is shaking your hand. Like,
and that's the thing, and I know it's a hard thing to call, but exactly, like, it you've got to factor in, like, is there intent there, you know, what's the force of the foul? Just fouling a player, period, in the box, I don't think needs to automatically be a penalty. There needs to be denying of a clear goal scoring opportunity, and this one and a number of others I felt like were a little harsh.
So I didn't get to see the big Portland-Seattle derby game. How did that go?
Well,
do you say derby or darby?
I say darby, but I accept both. We take all currency here. Speaking of teams that put seemingly unofficial things on their homepages, after the game, Portland Timbers put up the match report, which typically has a photo, the two logos, and the score. And Portland Timbers had their logo, and for Seattle Sounders, they just had a fish skeleton, in reference to Seattle Flounders, as they're famously known out here in Cascadia.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, oh, damn, okay. Not a particularly exciting game. However, the Timbers are now, they've won 4 games in a row. Man, a team that has turned its season around. They started and they looked awful, absolutely dreadful. And all of a sudden, they've put together this winning streak, and they're very quickly climbing the table. And so a team that was right down near the bottom is now leapfrog over Vancouver and is sitting fourth with 2 games in hand over them. So a team that's been very similar to Dallas in, you know, maybe not winning a lot of games, but also not critically not losing a lot of them and not conceding an undue number of goals.
The when you look at Portland and Seattle and Toronto, they are 2 teams that both started the accelerator in Mario Kart at the wrong time and spun out at the. There are 3 teams that all spun out at the beginning, so the whole race is ahead of them, and they're like, they are now just racing against each other, kind of, in their climb back to
exactly
something like contending.
And that's precisely my point about teams like New York City that appear to do so well and then they get blown out by Red Bulls. That, you know, they started very strong, but we've seen it. Every MLS team goes through a dip at some point in the season. It just depends on when, and it depends how long it lasts. So I think it's okay for Portland to be just coming into their own now. The chemistry looks great. You know, it was a big win over a Seattle side that had a busy week, but, you know, another crucial win for the Timbers. I think they're another team that I'll be watching to be climbing up the table if they keep putting on performances like that. However, their next game is against LAFC, so I see that one as being a real fireworks contest. If they can get a point out of that, I think that will show perhaps their potential if we're looking ahead to the offseason already.
No doubt. New England Revolution. This is the poster child for what we were talking about with consistency in teams. The Revs can get blown out and then blow out the next game. Like, it's weird. Yeah. Or the Revs, not the Reds.
And I think it just speaks to the mentality that they have. Lee Wynn, of course, now is gone. Didn't play a single minute for them this season. They haven't needed him. Pania came in and just basically won this game for them. But 3-2 over Toronto, admittedly a struggling Toronto, a Toronto that lost their midweek game as well. This was a massive win for New England. Regardless of what you think about Toronto and their fortunes right now, they really needed to win this one and did so. Okay, they gave up the goals, but really, 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 they looked very strong in this.
Yeah, I say it's a blowout, and I know it was 3-2, but it seemed like the game was played like a blowout. Like it got very close very late, but at the same time, like that, the fourth goal or the third goal at the beginning of the second half was like a statement of intent.
Yeah, that was, it's very clear. Like, we're winning this one. We're taking this. And Greg Vanney just, yeah, defensively, Toronto has not looked great. Of course, they've got injuries to contend with, but
they could.
Yeah,
Michael
Bradley is center back. It's not working out so hot these weeks.
Not that you know, Bradley's out of position. I'm not gonna take too much off him for not doing well and not his position. But it's like, yes, you need to have center backs that you play in the center back position, and if you don't, it's gonna be bad. Like that's
it's gonna be real, real bad.
The first goal was a turnover near the center line, and I would
horrendous turnover.
Yeah, and this is a great point about staying focused in sort of, you know, watching what's happening to the ball reacting to what's happening on the pitch, because you wouldn't think that a turnover at center necessarily has to lead to a goal. If people are able to move and respond to what's happening around them. and maybe not give up the turnover in the first place. But it was the second goal was also the same.
Yeah, I mean, giveaways that were so bad they actually just looked like passes from the other team. Mm-hmm. The real struggle for Toronto now is going to be, because they are short on games over the next few weeks, they have to make up those games. So they played two this week. They lost 2-1 against Seattle. They looked okay in that game, but Seattle clearly looked like the winners. And now they're going to be facing Orlando without Giovinco, because Giovinco put his hands on the guy's face, which you're not supposed to do.
That's, I think that this is so funny. This was a week as well, just from some of the games I saw, I was blown away by teams that really screwed themselves over with a red card, even at the exact wrong moment. Gio getting sent off in the just after scoring a penalty. Yeah. It's 3-2. It's 3-2 in injury time, and you get sent off. This is the worst. It's extremely unideal.
New England was trying to rile him up a little bit, and I think that's fine. But one of the other things is that one of the New England goals was caused because Giovinco flopped in the box, gave up the ball, and New England just ran down with a pitch with it and scored. And time and time and time again, we talk about Giovinco spends more time lying on his belly on the pitch or getting embroiled in shenanigans rather than doing what he does best, which is score fucking amazing goals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he just needs to keep his head a little bit, because right now, boy, does Toronto need him. The one bright spot, I think, for Toronto is Chapman had about 5 or 6 chances in this game and had a couple in the one in Seattle. And if Chapman can begin to find the back of the net on some of those, that will help out greatly. And so mm-hmm. Toronto's not completely, they're not out of the woods, but they're also not without some youthful talent and players stepping up to fill in roles and provide. So maybe things start to turn around for Toronto, but a rough week with 2 back-to-back losses.
Yeah, so in Toronto, we effortlessly moved from 10 to 11 on the power rankings because New England and Toronto were located right next to each other. I got to see the first 30 minutes of that of the Seattle game. As things are going with this sort of, you know, the three teams at the bottom, what did you think that meant in the never ending Toronto Seattle rivalry?
It's hard to say. I mean, everybody called it a rematch, considering how terrible Seattle's been this season. And just as a reminder for folks, they do sit dead last in the Western Conference with 8 points, tied with Colorado and San Jose with just 8 points, 2 wins. Each of those teams has 2 wins, 5 losses, 2.
I'm going to say.
Yeah. And this is the counterpoint of what I was talking about with New York Red Bull, where, you know, we've given Toronto such of the sort of the, I don't know if benefit of the doubt is the right word, but, you know, they've only got so many points in the table, and we say, oh, well, they'll catch up. Mm-hmm. They'll recover. They're secretly a good team. But other teams have done better with the same lot kind of that was provided to them. I guess they didn't go as far, but.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things that if, like, we'll get to this in a moment when we talk about the Whitecaps, but how long can you go on saying, well, it's going to get better before you go like, the moment's kind of passed. I mean, the season's mm-hmm. not completely a total write-off for them. I mean, they could, in theory, begin to put together some points and climb up the table, but there's already 6 points between New England and Chicago for that sixth spot. So I know it's a long season, there's lots of soccer to play, but yeah, how many weeks is it okay to say, oh, Toronto's a good team, they're definitely going to start getting results, and they have 2 back-to-back losses in a critical week that they really should have been taking 4 points out of. They go home with 0 mm-hmm. and now face Orlando in their next game.
Yeah, and the fact that we say and they face Orlando in their next game as a really hard thing when they're ranked eighth shows how stacked the upper deck of the power rankings are. Mm-hmm. But counterpoint, here's my unless for the Moving Van fans out there, to all of this sort of this doom and gloom, is that I talked a lot at the beginning of the season about TFC needing like a challenge to do, right? Like they couldn't really have ever had a second season. Like it's really hard. It would have been really hard, I think, competitively to have a second season where they just sort of like, you know, score five goals and then go have a drink of water and score five more goals, right? They were not going to be able to you have to have a goal. You have to have, like, you know, a challenge to overcome to a certain degree. And last year, it was just beating Seattle again to prove that they didn't, you know, they belonged. And this year, maybe it will be getting into the playoffs.
You're right. And I mean, maybe this is just a club that needs some adversity to shine. But, boy, they've got a lot of adversity on their side right now. So it's time. It's time to start making it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting results in the next two teams on the power rankings here, Houston Dynamo and Vancouver Whitecaps, who played each other to a 2-2 draw, so perhaps it is fitting that they're right beside each other. This game was a little bit bananas. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there, but I did watch it afterwards. And rather than go through every single play that happened in this game, because it was a little bit bananas, here's my question to you.
Yes.
Have we been looking at Vancouver Whitecaps incorrectly? And is it perhaps possible that as a Whitecaps fan, it's been incredibly frustrating to see arguably the best Whitecaps team or squad that we've ever seen on paper fail to produce results that really give us that much to cheer for, especially after such a strong start to the season? Or, like, is Vancouver actually not been bad and definitely needs to improve, but considering they're able to reach deep and in a critical moment, rather than capitulate to a very good Houston side, get something out of it through goals from their two center backs connecting? If there was ever a game to just need somebody to step up and win a game for you, or rather salvage a game for you, this was it. So my question is, like, have we been too hard on the Whitecaps? Are they better than we actually think they are, and they just haven't had the results? Or does Robbo need to go, and do we need to clean house?
I'm very interested in this question, especially as we, like even as far down as the idea of, like, should you be happy with a last-minute draw? Draws are sometimes very frustrating, but unlike other sports, like hockey, if you're down, it's the best you can hope for sometimes. And I know that sort of the going concern when it comes to watching Vancouver is the passion. Like, are they playing with passion and intensity? Are they not just, like, are they winning or losing, but, like, are they playing in a way that suggests they could have won at all? And sometimes it's not all there. So I know a lot of people were upset about the result being a 2-2 draw. But I kind of feel like it's hard to, even though draws aren't the best, it's hard to feel super disappointed when you are rewarded with that last minute equalizer. Yeah,
when you're down 2-1 in the 89th minute to a very good side and you've been struggling, and you get a goal in the 94th minute, it's hard not to sort of celebrate that. And I tweeted quite despondently at the beginning of this game when Houston got on the board. You know, when I look at the things that the Vancouver Whitecaps need to do better, it's tightening things up, but it's not like everything is bad. You know, Aha and Waston need to figure things out defensively, but if they're able to make up for that in offensive form, sure, why not?
It's a great moment for Waston, who has been having some problems.
Yeah.
I think that he's had a really up and down season. So to be, again, offense is not the same as having a scoring a goal is not the same as having a great defensive game. But, you know, to come through as the captain, I think, is huge for him. It's also great after – it's great to see Jose Aja score his first goal, right? Like, that's also –
and a good goal, too. I'd say a striker's goal. the one thing I kind of note here is that, you know, poor clearances really still seem to trouble them. It troubles a lot of MLS players that they dick around with it a little too much at the top of the box when they win back possession, and they just fail to just put in the tackle and just get the ball away. And that's where the first and second goals came from.
Mm-hmm.
And the big thing here, and I don't want to say too much about it, but is Breck Shea really needs to, we need to consider what his role in the team is. Not just because of that horrendous miss where he is wide open to score a goal and basically
that
stands
sucked.
On top of the ball.
Wow.
But I was doing some number crunching because I don't normally do this, and it's a little unfair, but just bear with me. I kept thinking, like, is Breck Shea the new Derek Maddox? I looked. Now, they each only have 3 goals. However, Breck Shea is making $750,000 a year, and Darren Maddox is making $416,000. So there's an argument that, and I know Darren Maddox hasn't played with us in a while, in terms of return, in terms of two similar style and quality players, the fact that we're paying so much for Breck Shea, I think, is really becoming the sore point for a lot of fans. That, you know, this is a DP. And
now,
all DPs make mistakes and have their time. But he's yet to be a really critical impact on the field this season. And it is starting to appear as a real weak link.
The one thing that I would sort of... My one... consideration that I would make just before jumping in there too quickly is, and I don't have these numbers in front of me yet. Click. But Shea also is plays in fewer minutes than I think, because even because Maddox, which is maybe worse in terms of the comparison for Maddox, because Maddox probably, I believe, starts all the games that he plays, or is a regular starter for DC. So it's a little bit different. It speaks to me. It's like the numbers are something, but yeah. So Maddox has 3 goals in 7 games played with 512 minutes, and Maddox has I'm way wrong. Shea's played more games in. Shea has played 2 more games, but it has 100 fewer minutes. So
yeah.
Of
course, yeah, and I'm doing this sort of tongue in cheek and just to be a little bit silly and try to have fun with a very upsetting situation. I did a little poll on our Twitter to say, does Breck Shea make more money than which player? Darlington Nagbe, Benny Failhaber, Kiasi Zardes, or Joao Plata? The answer is he makes more money than all of them.
Well, what it speaks to with Vancouver and the issues that people talk about with Vancouver and seriousness are the issues that it speaks to are really issues of, like, the plan in terms of top players and top salaries and who the top stars are going to be, right? Like, we have a very, you know, the middle is very constructed, but in terms this is where you can get into the critique of, well, who's our DP, right? Is that there's no plan for it. Shea was signed as a TAM player and was kind of just thrown into that spot because nothing else was going on. You know? And that's frustrating.
It is frustrating. It's a lot of money to just piss away for kind of like, I don't know, maybe this guy.
These numbers just came out on May 10th, and there might be more to talk about in terms of the whole league. But if you look at the Vancouver perspective of it, You look at the top five and see Kamara at a million, Shea and Ali Ghazal at 700,000.
Yeah.
And Efrain Juarez at 620,000 and Waston at 604. So those are your five players that are making over 6,000. Three of them are defenders or defensive midfielders.
Which I actually think is money well spent.
Right. Well, I mean, for Waston and Ghazal has had a... It's like Ghazal has had actually, I think, a quietly good season. But he's still not what I would call, like, an MLS team's third best player. Right?
No, for sure. So, I mean... We'll see what happens tonight at the San Jose game. We don't have time to go through every single team down here at the bottom, but there's not a hell of a lot to say about them other than not great. San Jose did pick up an important win this week against Minnesota. Minnesota just continues to not have answers. They still don't look terrible, but just can't seem to get a win to save their lives. And inexplicably, Philadelphia Union beat Montreal. Like, Montreal's been inconsistent, but Philadelphia won a game?
This was that result I was talking about where you really screwed yourself over by... you really created a lot of problems for yourself. You had the red card. You lost the red card. Couldn't have been worse. Couldn't have been worse for Montreal.
The one thing I will say is that Piatti and Anthony Jackson-Hamel continue to be looking like the players that can make something happen. So it's not totally doomsday yet for Montreal. But again,
that's
another team
point.
That just needs to be a little bit more consistent. And to me, this is a game that, okay, they lose 1-0 to Chicago, fine. Losing 2-0 to Philadelphia, to a 10-man Philadelphia? No. You need to put that game to bed. That was a missed 3 points for them.
It's worth pointing out that, like you said, they did have a lot of good chances. It's not like they didn't load stuff forward. They clearly played with intensity, perhaps a little bit too much intensity in terms of Daniel Lovett's. This is the one I was thinking of. This is the play I was thinking of in terms of a player, you know, I think he came down on, the player he was marking in a breakaway situation. And like, it clearly did not appear to be intentional, but he just got, it just was a very unfortunate series of events for him.
Yeah. And another team too, that the results don't tell the full picture. I think Minnesota's created a lot of chances too, and the results look like they've just been run over by every single team, and I'm sure it feels like that to them, but Minnesota continues to, you know, they haven't been completely blown out of every opportunity, and I do feel a little bit bad that, you know, they've had tons of injury problems. They've got some great new signings trying desperately to help them out, but, you know, okay, that maybe they're getting down to the bottom in power rankings, but they are sitting mid-table in the West, and
they're sitting above Montreal in the power rankings, which is where they belong.
Sure, and they're still. I don't think their season is over, but they need to find some answers quick defensively. They've given up an awful lot of goals. That being said, so has Real Salt Lake and Vancouver. They've all given up similar amounts of goals. So, and I think that those are three teams that, again, have looked quite shaky and need to start finding some answers and getting 3 points from week to week.
I think sitting at number 20, San Jose is a team that I think maybe should be ranking higher than it's put here. And maybe it should be doing better than it is, you know? Like, maybe it's a little bit the ranking's fault. Maybe it's a little bit San Jose's fault. Danny Hewson is great. Their 3-1 win against Minnesota, again, a team that looks like it gets rolled over, but is like not the worst.
Yeah. And it will be interesting to see what happens tonight against Vancouver. I'm going to try to be a little bit more objective and watch San Jose, because again, another team that's not been complete shit, But as you said, a little bit Minnesota's fault that they're so far down the table. Certainly still an attacking team that can create chances, though. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a couple of teams that we missed. We'll look at them next week. We've got lots more games coming up that we'll be able to talk about.
I know we gotta go here soon, but the moment we talked about power rankings, there was one question I wanted to ask you is, sure. Does DC United deserve to be bottom? They are the ones ranked at 23rd. What do you think of that?
I think it's probably pretty fair. I think if we're talking power rankings, potential for making a resurgence, yes. However, what we've seen is, like this week, you know, they lost 3-2 to RSL. Again, this is a team that's scoring goals, that has some team chemistry. They definitely have some things to iron out. If they're able to bring in a big signing, like a Wayne Rooney type, in the summer, and they get a 3-3 result instead of a 3-2 result, they get a couple more wins at home. Mm-hmm. Playoff contention this year, maybe not, but I do think they deserve to be at the bottom in terms of the power rankings. Mm-hmm. The results speak for themselves. They only have 5 points. They've won one game. They are right now the worst team in MLS, statistically. I don't think it's over for them yet, and I would expect to see them to climb the table. But it's a tough schedule in the East. I think if they're going to get points, they need to be starting to look at some of the Western matchups they have and trying to scare some points there. It's not so much been that DC United has been terrible; it's that every other team has been much better.
You're definitely right.
Great. So yeah, lots of games coming up. I will, maybe I'll try to talk to some frustrated fans at tonight's game and get some color commentary for you. Until then, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. I am a editor at Howler Magazine, onehowler.com. You can find this podcast at, thatsomls.com and at thatsomls on iTunes. Please rate, review, and subscribe.
And you have the new Howler, the old Howler in your hands.
Yeah, it took a while because it was into my old house in Toronto, but it's really nice. Do you have time for story time?
Yeah, give me a quick story.
Okay, so their main feature is, why in the world would anyone want to be a referee? And it focuses on Mark Geiger in a game, in an Atlanta game in Atlanta against, New York. Yes. Wait, no, it's against, it's last season between Atlanta and Philadelphia. And this is, I thought of you the moment I read this story, which is that a player scores a goal and the whole thing goes wild and crazy, you know, all the flames are shooting up and stuff like that. Immediately Mark Geiger is calling it offside, even though the assistant referee had his whistle down. And the reason why he did that, so he called the goal. He immediately, though, he did know it was offside, but he looked at the flag and saw it was down. The AR didn't call it because he knew VAR would get it. We see in the story after the game, he says,
He believed that VAR would get it.
Yeah, he's like, I overthought it. And Mark Geiger says, that's correct. It's true. You did.
Oh, God. Mark Geiger. Right up there with Ted Uncle. Lord help us.
He was an interesting story. I highly recommend it. Where can we find you online?
You can find me online tweeting despondently about the Whitecaps at That's So MLS and creating cheeky little polls for you to answer. Until next time, keep your hands out of other people's faces and don't get sent off.
Excellent.